I was asked to give you sort of a brief overview of the history of industrial agriculture, the rise of CAFOs in the state. I will just call them factory farms, because I think CAFOs is sort of an acronym which is sanitizing and not accurate. So we've had factory farms since the 1850s. The first factory farms emerged in New York City. They were the infamous Swill dairies. There are all sorts of articles about them. Thousands of children were dying from diphtheria. They're adding plaster to the milk to make it look whiter. These are cows fed on distiller's waste, locked in barns to provide really cheap milk for urban children. And this is one of the first cases of where we actually started having food safety laws, because people were dying literally from bad factory farm milk in our cities. And then you can jump forward to Upton Sinclair and the Jungle. Probably a lot of you have read that. I've read it. It's a disturbing book. One of the things that came out of that was food safety rules, again, dealing with meat and other things. It's important to remember that our factory dairy farms lead into the meat supply. So culled dairy cows don't just go away. They end up in our hamburgers. So like the big joke the Onion had about most U.S. children get their antibiotics from McDonald's. It is true, literally. You are getting your antibiotics from McDonald's hamburgers, because those are culled dairy cows going into the hamburgers, right? So that's something to remember. So it's not just a dairy problem. It's a meat problem as well. And if you're really concerned about that, I have more information about antibiotic residues in milk and meat coming out of Wisconsin. We have the highest rates of illegal antibiotic use in the country, sometimes worse than California. It's something really serious, and even our state vet's very worried about it. And the trend of industrialization agriculture has been going on for quite a while. I would say a lot of it's happened since World War II. We used to have 3.5 million dairy farms in this country right after World War II. We're down to less than 60,000. Right? In fact, when I first came to Wisconsin, there were only two CAFOs in the whole state. I came in 1993 to start my work at UW-Madison. Now we're up to almost 300. So we've had this explosion of CAFOs at the expense of, I would argue, family farms, smaller farms. So this has been a challenge. In 2004, we had the livestock siting law passed, which I was at those hearings. Many of us there spent hours waiting to testify. And this was a law that basically gave the green light to CAFO expansion in the state, factory farm expansion. My interpretation of it is basically it's a one-size-fits-all approach to try to promote this type of farming in the state. It preempts local control. A lot of the people testifying it were actually local governments, very worried about if we give the state the authority to do this, what control do we have over, say, water quality, health issues, zoning, and so on. So basically, the state took away those rights and gave them to themselves. It did have some issues about setbacks, some other rules. I've heard many people in the CAFO industry in the state saying we are the most regulated CAFO industry anywhere in the world or in the United States, and I just sort of have to laugh, because of course, first, rules are only as good if they're enforced, and secondly, we do not have a lot of things which other states do have for their factory farms. For instance, we have no ambient air quality rules. Other states have those for their farms. So we have no rules about ammonia emissions, hydrogen sulfide emissions, methane emissions. We don't have rules about air quality. We don't have any bonding requirement. So other states literally have a cleanup fund dedicated to this industry. And if you apply for a permit, you have to put money into that cleanup fund. So if there's a problem, the polluter pays. We don't have that here. So we have token fines from DNR. So these are some of the challenges with the current livestock siting law. Now, the DNR is required to permit these CAFOs under the Clean Water Act. Most of you might be familiar with that. So we have a National Clean Water Act. That authority to impose these permits has been placed with the DNR. And they have a pollution discharge elimination system permit process. And if you're above 1,000 animal units, which if you want to get into all the formulas, we can talk more about that. But basically, if you reach a certain threshold, you have to apply for a permit. You get a permit, and then you move forward. At this point, there's been no, and maybe someone here in the audience could correct me, there's been no permit denied by the DNR. Nope, no permit ever denied by the DNR for CAFO? Not that I know of. Okay, so we've had lots of permits applied for, rubber stamping going on as far as I'm concerned, and I've been at many of these meetings. I was up at Rosendale. We had 600 people testifying against that permit. My comment slip was lost somehow or other. lots of people's comment slips were lost. I never got to speak. So, I mean, there's that problem with how do you actually have a voice in this process, but it seems like these permits are just being rubber stamped. I think the only permit that was denied was actually for a prison CAFO farm near Fitzgerald's house. They withdrew the funding for that CAFO because it was part of a prison and it was near Fitzgerald's house. So that's just, I think that's the only case where a permit was actually not denied. They just withdrew the funding for the farm. So there is a case of one permit being denied. So we can't say there hasn't been one didn't go through. So what do these CAFOs, what do they have to do? They have to have a permit process. They must be reviewed and approved by the DNR. Of course, now we're hearing that they're going to just switch that to the DAT cap. You know, our regulatory thing for the environment is not going to apply to an industry that's affecting the environment. It's going to be a different agency dealing with that. They're supposed to have a spill response plan. They're supposed to have a nutrient management plan, which I would argue is basically self-policing. There isn't really much nutrient management planning going on. So the upshot is that between 2005 and 2016, the number of CAFOs in Wisconsin have doubled. 33% of CAFOs in Wisconsin are now operating with expired permits. They don't have official permission to be operating, but they're still operating anyway. So I think really important to remember that our DNR doesn't have the capacity to actually enforce permits, review permits, and they're still operating without official permits. We've had over 3 million gallons of manure spilled since 2013-2014. One-third of the wells in Kewaunee County are now unsafe. 33% of CAFOs in Wisconsin are now operating with expired permits. 33% of CAFOs in Wisconsin are now operating with expired permits. If you're a tourist in Kewaunee County, I would not be drinking anyone's well water. Not a good idea. Taxpayers are having to pay for all sorts of problems with these operations. Supplying emergency drinking water, fixing roads are destroyed by overloaded manure haulers. The list just goes on and on and on, right? We have a dead zone in Green Bay, thanks to manure runoff. The Ohio watershed, which we are in right here, twice as much manure is being sprayed on the fields outside of the Ohio watershed that can't actually be absorbed into the ground, so it's flowing into Lake Mendota, Lake Monona. That's why we have horrible beach closures here and eutrophication problems. Declining property values. I mean, if you try to live in a rural area, can you have a summer graduation party at your house anymore? Perhaps not. Why is that? Nuisance, stench, too many flies. And the latest disturbing thing is that there's now bulk permitting of CAFOs happening. So basically, when a CAFO applies to have its permit reissued, like the DNR is so desperate to get these through, we'll just have five at once, railroad them through, without hardly any public comment opportunity. So that's the latest thing. And of course, some of you probably saw the Legislative Audit Bureau went to the DNR and said, hey, how are you doing with these violations? 94% of all violations reported to the DNR went unaddressed. Basically, you get a, you know, get out of jail free card if you violate the laws in the state of Wisconsin, according to the legislative's own audit bureau. If you're at the DNR, nothing's going to be happening to you. Only 33 cases out of 558 incidents were dealt with by the DNR. So who's asleep at the wheel? That's what I'd like to know. So, you know, what are some of the possible things we could do? Well, our group, Family Farm Defenders, which actually was founded by dairy farmers in the state concerned about bovine growth hormone and other things, is very much opposed to CAFOs. We would like to see more family farms, not less. This trend in the industry is destroying our family farms in the state. What do we need? Statewide cleanup fund, polluter pays principle. Anyone applying for a permit should put money into a fund. Happens in other states. Why not here? Why are the taxpayers left on the hook to clean up this mess? Why don't we have ambient air quality standards? Don't we all breathe air? I mean, I drink water too, but why don't we have ambient air quality standards? Setback requirements are a joke. And if I hear another public servant anywhere in the state telling someone to pour bleach down their well to deal with CAFO pollution, I will scream. I will literally scream. That is so socially and scientifically and medically irresponsible to think that bleach is going to deal with nitrates or cryptosporidium. And I don't know what those people are doing, but they should have their license revoked. And I've heard that more than once in the state where public health officials are saying that as a solution to the factory farm problem. pour bleach down your well. That is so irresponsible in the 21st century. You know, I teach economics, but I've taken enough science to know that's just wrong. That is medically wrong to tell people to do that. Engineering requirements. Manure lagoons are only the tip of the iceberg. What about exploding manure digesters? I can show you one just north of this town. Public notice. Why don't we have the right to know about these things? What happened to public comment? Do we have enough time to even comment on these things? Enforcement capacity. Rules are only good if they're enforced. If we have no people enforcing the laws in the state, and I'll tell you right now, the average CAFO is not visited in 5 years, very often, if at all. The rules aren't very good. And we all have the public right to know. I should be able to go online and find out how much manure is spilled from this facility, how much in state subsidies they got to do that. That should all be public information, public right to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me today. My name is Lynn Utesh, and I live in Kewaunee County, Wisconsin, which is over just east of Green Bay. And we are the county below Door County, just to give you an idea of where we're at. I farm, I have 150 acres, I farm 100% grass-fed beef. On our current farm for the past 15 years, prior to that we lived on Washington Island, which is an island out in Lake Michigan, where we farmed up there for 15 years prior to where we're at. In Kewaunee County, we have 16 CAFOs. We have a total human population of 20,500 people. Our total cattle herd is over 100,000 animals. The definition for a CAFO is anything over 1,000 animal units. That equates to approximately 750 mature dairy cows. We have CAFOs in my county are milking between 4 and 5,000 cows. The groundwater in Kewaunee County is deplorable, and that comes from Judge Jeffrey Bolt. Kewaunee County's groundwater, 34% of the wells tested are contaminated with E. coli and/or nitrates. We have had salmonella, rotavirus, campylobacter, cryptosporidium, all detected in our drinking water. In 2004, the Tremel family had liquid manure get into their well. That poisoning sent their infant daughter to intensive care. In 2014, in Door County, which is a county directly north from my county, there were 16 families were poisoned by liquid manure getting into a sinkhole. And again, an infant was sent to intensive care. The grandmother was so afraid because she described what that infant was experiencing. They were changing bloody diapers. Kewaunee County, we have three river systems, the Anapee, the East Twin, and the Kewaunee River. All three of our rivers are on the EPA's impaired waters list. Working with Marquette University, we have identified in both the water and in the sediments multiple antibiotics and even worse, multiple drug-resistant bacteria living in our surface waters and in the sediment. My organization, which is Kewaunee Cares, which was started by my wife and I and a couple friends, which CARES stands for Citizens Advocating Responsible Environmental Stewardship, we have tested all three of those river systems. We can pretty much guarantee that any time that there is a major rain event of approximately an inch of rain, all three of our rivers have E. coli readings that would close a public beach. We have one of our rivers that the nitrate level set by the EPA for drinking water standards is 10 parts per million. We have one of our rivers that's one of the tributaries that go into it that has never tested below 10 parts per million. We have young children. There was a young boy that actually went to swimming and playing in the stream behind his parents' home. This young child had a cut on his knee. That cut became infected, and within days, this young boy was at Children's Hospital and had to have a portion of his kneecap removed and holes drilled into his leg bone to drain out the MRSA. We live along Lake Michigan. The beaches in Lake Michigan, where we live, in Algoma and Kewaunee, are regularly closed. In 2014, the beach was open 90 days where there was testing occurring. Out of the 90 days, 20 of those days, it was closed because of E. coli levels. We have massive cladophora growing on our beaches, or in the waters that ends up on our beaches. Research has shown that cladophora growth, the algae, the green stinking algae that ends up on your beaches, is directly fueled by excessive phosphorus from the local water system. Our water testing of our rivers shows that our phosphorus levels are at the point where they are, the streams and rivers are either completely unhealthy or very poor water quality. Kewaunee County has 85% of its land, the farmland, under nutrient management plans. Does everybody know what a nutrient management plan, any idea? A nutrient management plan is what the DNR and DATCAP says is, it is to provide the nutrients for the plants so that they can, what the plant can actually uptake, you are supposed to be only applying so many nutrients, and that's what these nutrient management say, is that they give a number, and supposedly the plants can take up all of those nutrients and are not going to have a negative impact. Unfortunately, Andrew Craig from the Wisconsin DNR, under oath, testified that nutrient management plans are to maximize the yield and profit for the farm. They are not designed to protect our surface or our groundwater. The fact is, Kewaunee County has one of the highest levels of farmer participation in nutrient management plans. If nutrient management plans worked, Kewaunee County would have the most pristine waters in the state of Wisconsin. Yet we don't. Judge Jeffrey Bolt also said that Kewaunee County has experienced massive regulatory failure. There needs to be enforcement. In the town of Lincoln, over 50% of the wells are contaminated with E. coli and/or nitrates. Yet the enforcement to prevent excessive nutrients, excessive runoff, consists of paper. It's called a stepped enforcement. So the first time a farm actually does something wrong, they get a notice of noncompliance, a piece of paper. The second time they do something wrong, they get a notice of violation, another piece of paper. Third time they do something wrong, they get to have a compliance conference. So that means that the DNR sits down with the violator and they talk about it. At no time have fines been given at any point throughout that process. The only time that a fine can be given to a violator with a CAFO permit is if it goes to the Department of Justice. Unfortunately, for the Department of Justice to take that up, it needs to be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars because they have to justify their lawyers spending the time to do the work. So needless to say, it's very seldom that it ever takes place. Kewaunee Cares, along with several other organizations here in the state of Wisconsin, due to our massive regulatory failure and our water quality issues, petitioned the US EPA to invoke their emergency powers under the Safe Drinking Water Act. We did that in 2014. As of today, we have not officially heard anything back from the EPA. Kewaunee County petitioned the EPA prior to Flint, Michigan. We have received no help. We petitioned to have the EPA provide clean drinking water for our citizens, to do an investigation as to where our contamination was coming from, and to do the enforcement to prevent it from happening in the future. We have yet to receive any drinking water for our citizens from the EPA. We are yet to get any drinking water for our citizens from the Wisconsin DNR or the state of Wisconsin. We are yet to get any drinking water for our citizens from Kewaunee County. The only water that has been provided to our citizens has been done by the Algoma School District in partnership with a water treatment provider, funded by the citizens. I'm going to dispel a couple myths that you have for Dane County. Digesters don't work. Digesters are designed for one thing only, to produce methane to burn for energy. Mark Borkart, USDA researcher, along with Becky Larson from UW-Cals, right here in Madison, did research on this. What goes into a digester comes out of a digester. Nutrients are not eliminated. And the fact is, those nutrients go back on the ground. The manure does not disappear. It doesn't go away. It ends up on our water, on our ground, and in our waters. We in Kewaunee County need help from the people all over the state of Wisconsin. We need our legislatures to be awoken to our issue. For years, we have been coming to the state capitol here to talk about the water situation in Kewaunee County. I can say up until this year, actually just a couple months ago, the majority of all legislative people denied ever hearing of Kewaunee County. We need your help, as does the rest of the state of Wisconsin.
My name is Christy Greening, and I am from central Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Rapids area. I am the co-founder of Citizens Water Coalition of Wisconsin. I'm also the leader of our local group called Saratoga Concerned, and I also sit on the board of the Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network. Many people ask me, why on earth are you a part of so many groups? And it's a very easy answer. A CAFO was proposed for my backyard. I live in the township of Saratoga, which is just south of Wisconsin Rapids, Wood County, center of the state. We have about 5,000 residents in our township. Our township is highly recreational and residential. We have no ag in our community whatsoever. We have two class one trout streams. Our land is forested and pine plantation with residential and recreational areas all over Saratoga. Saratoga also lies on the central sands, which means the sandy soils. So nothing really grows in Saratoga. You know, when you look at the history of our town, ag is not there because it's sandy soils. We have jack pines and scrub brush. That's about all you get in Saratoga. I actually have three children that probably never seen a mud puddle until they were years old, because in Saratoga it can rain for days and the sand filters that water right down, that they had never even seen a mud puddle. So when you talk about that water, and the water goes right down into our water table, anything you put on that sand in Saratoga does the same thing. So in 2012, about 5.5 years ago, almost 6 years ago, come this June, the Waisaki family of companies announced to our township and to the DNR the proposal of the Golden Sands Dairy to our township. And in a nutshell, what that meant was they were proposing 6,400 dairy cows, proposing to clear cut almost 8,000 acres of our forested property in Saratoga, drop down 49 high capacity wells, and to sugarcoat the whole thing, icing on the cake, you could say, they were going to spray irrigate their liquid manure 60 million gallons worth every year around the residents' homes of Saratoga. Of course, our town was shocked. We're a fairly tight-knit community. We enjoy our recreation, our businesses, our local taverns and restaurants in the area. So to know that it was going to be literally ripped apart and put into ag land was devastating. The residents of Saratoga received a mailer from the Waisaki family of companies that stated the CAFO for Saratoga was going to mirror their sister facility over in Armenia. Armenia is about 20 miles away from us. It's across the Wisconsin River. But what we realized in Saratoga as citizens, as we started talking about what is this going to do to our town and what is this going to look like, we realized that the Central Sands Dairy over in Armenia had the same sandy soils that we do in Saratoga, has the same topography of the land. They were spray irrigating manure over in Armenia already. And so the citizens band together and we took a tour. We went over to Armenia and we started knocking on doors because we wanted to know what was going to happen in our township with the sandy soils. And we already had really the sister facility, or what we like to call the looking glass into our future, of what was going to happen. And what we found out almost immediately is that one of the farm's water monitoring wells over on the other side of the river was already measuring at 72 parts per million per nitrates. Now, 10 parts per million is the legal healthy standard drinking amount. So they were seven times the appropriate standard for nitrates in their own monitoring wells of the farm. We started knocking on doors of the residents, and we found out that in most of the residents, especially ones surrounding the farm fields, the only thing that their water was good for was flushing the toilet. They couldn't drink it, they can't cook with it, can't shower in it. They could flush their toilet. That's what they could do safely with their water. Many of the homes at that time, and this was 5 years ago, were already measuring up in the high 50s for nitrates in their waters coming out of their home faucet. We spoke to two residents over there that actually had to move out of their homes. Because when we start talking about spray irrigation of manure, you know, down in the southern part of Wisconsin, you don't really see the big, long industrial irrigators that are out on the field spraying. In the Central Sands, to grow anything, those are running almost 24/7. And they run 24/7, and the majority of the time it's liquid waste that is coming out of those irrigators. Over 150 different pathogens. It's drifting in the wind. The two residents that ended up selling out their homes to the farm that was currently there was because they would walk outside in the morning and their cars were full of drift manure from the field that had been irrigated overnight. Their kids' swimming pools were full of manure from the drift from the irrigators that were going overnight. Mr. Miller, a very nice older gentleman, was retired, unfortunately confined to a wheelchair. The one thing that he liked to do was to take his wheelchair outside and to feed his birds. And when the irrigators kicked on every spring and the manure sprayed every spring, his wheelchair ramp became so full of manure he could no longer go in and out of his house unassisted. And so he literally became a prisoner in his own home. We had a local cranberry grower that had paid for a local hydrologist to go out and test the waters around the Central Sands Dairy. Because again, we're trying to figure out, you have sandy soils, we have sandy soils, what is it going to be like for us? And we had creeks and streams in Saratoga. They have creeks and streams out in Armenia. And E. coli was found and other contaminants within their open waterways that people had access to. Just recently, I met a young mother from out in the area that didn't know her nitrates were so high in her water. And she was pregnant and drinking that water. At 23 weeks, she had to terminate her pregnancy because the baby was not going to make it due to severe birth defects. Now, she can't prove that it was the nitrates in her water, but the correlation is there, and it's a sad situation that's happening out in that township. And of course, downstream from the Central Sands Dairy, the Waisaki family of companies, is the biggest blue-green algae bloom in the state of Wisconsin. It's on the Petenwell flowage, just downstream from that factory farm. And that blue-green algae bloom can be seen from outer space. There is people that live on the Petenwell flowage whose animals have gone into the water and they've died. And it's a huge recreational area for central Wisconsin. So as a Saratoga resident, when I looked at that postcard where the Waisakis said we were going to be good neighbors, we almost choked because we know how they're treating their current neighbors and they're not going to be good neighbors to us either. And so in Saratoga, we decided to fight. And we've been fighting for 5.5 years. We're fighting on the emphasis of saving our water, keeping it clean and keeping it pure. Immediately, we train local citizen volunteers to be stream monitors of both our trout streams. So we have 5 years of data on the condition of our waterways in Saratoga and 5 years of data of the aquatic habitat. That's all registered and signed in with the DNR. Three different times we have done community-wide water testing for our residents. And so we have a baseline of home water tests of over 600 homes, all come back as pristine. Our water in Saratoga is excellent. Sand is a good filter if you're not putting too much of any one thing on it. So our water in Saratoga is pristine. We know that. We talked our town board into dropping 10 monitoring wells around the fields that are proposed for the Wasakie Dairy CAFO. So if this farm should ever come in, we also have 3 years worth of data testing from licensed hydrologists out of those monitoring wells. We know our water is perfect right now. So if it ever comes in, this farm ever does make it, we will know immediately when our water starts to become contaminated. So in Saratoga, we definitely have been battling, the citizens have been battling on the front lines, but our town board, lucky for us, has also taken this system or this situation through the court system. And actually just this past January, our case was heard in front of the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. We don't have a decision yet, but we're crossing our fingers, but it's been a long battle. And as you know, we had the speakers already talk about how the DNR holds a hearing but doesn't listen, and how in Kewaunee they're not getting the help that they need. We find the same thing. Every time in Saratoga that we felt like the waters were starting to roll in our favor, that we had another roadblock in the way of this CAFO, all of a sudden a bill would pop up in Madison that exactly and directly affected whatever we were battling to give the farm, or in the case Wysocki, who we were fighting, the legal right to do whatever he wanted. So every avenue that we tried to fight, a bill pops up in Madison and is almost immediately passed. And it has become overly frustrating to deal with the political end of things. And that's one thing that I have learned through my fight in the last 5.5 years, is that the majority of our elected officials don't care and they don't listen. You know, if you don't have big money and you don't have a huge group of people that may actually vote against them, they don't give a damn. And it was at this point, probably a year or two ago, when Mary and I and another, was it a year ago, February 8th, that we got together and we started talking about, there are so many individual groups across the state of Wisconsin, the folks in Kewaunee, the folks in Greene County, Mary in Bayfield, myself in Central Wisconsin. There's all these small groups all over the state that are fighting to preserve clean water. Regardless if it's CAFOs or frac sand mining or something else, we're all fighting for the same thing. And so we put our heads together, and that's when we formed the Citizens Water Coalition of Wisconsin. CWC does not just focus on CAFOs. We focus on any type of industry that is contaminating our water. But mainly what our mission is to lead and support and inspire local and state level legislation on clean drinking water. And we support elected officials who are willing to stand up for clean water and push forth initiatives to make sure that the citizens' right to clean water comes first and foremost in everything they do. We realize that our best chance right now is to get local water warriors. Water warriors at the local level, your county level, your town boards, to start initiating change and protecting you at the local level, and that eventually that will transfer over to the state level. But it is definitely a situation where you need to support those local individuals, because I think any one of us up here on the panel could talk about our frustration about 100 or 200 people that are supporting us and cheering us on, along with the three worker bees who are alongside us doing the work. And we need to empower those local citizens that want to stand up and make a difference. We need to empower them with our time, with our talents, with our treasures, to make sure that we can start making change. And that's what Citizens Water Coalition is all about, is putting those local water warriors into office, and so in the long run, hopefully get them to the state level. Okay, that's time.
My name is Mary Doherty, and I am from Bayfield, Wisconsin. And I got into the CAFO biz because there was a proposal for 26,000 hogs to be sited about 7 miles from Lake Superior. Kind of like Christy, we don't have northern Wisconsin. We're expecting 10 inches of snow tomorrow. So our growing season's really short, right? And we don't have a lot of agriculture. So I have to admit, when I first heard the word CAFO, I had to Google it because I didn't even know what it meant. Because it wasn't part of the world that I lived in, doesn't have large scale agriculture at all in it. And so that caused us to form a group called Farms Not Factories, which, knock on wood, I think we have at least held, his name is Dale Reichs, held Dale Reichs off. He's from Iowa. His application is still open, so that means that he still could come in at any time, but knock on wood, he's not there. It's been about three and a half, four years later now. And that's a big deal, because I also work for Socially Responsible Agriculture Project, which is a national nonprofit that deals exclusively with helping communities get organized around these factory farms. It's not just Wisconsin. This stuff is happening around the country, and it's happening in ways that are it's very much harming people. I've come to believe that in my truth, this seems like injustice and immorality. When we're going to talk about it in a way that really gets to what we're talking about, the question becomes, is our right to go to the grocery store and spend $2 on milk or $3.99 on bacon, does that make it right to have kids suffer from asthma? Does that make it right to have a gentleman not be able to go up his ramp into his house? Does that make it right that your property values are decreased because of an industry that you don't get any benefit from? And so while it's bad in Wisconsin, I will say that it's the canary in the coal mine is to look at Iowa. It's to look at North Carolina. It's to look down in Tonopah, Arizona, where there's millions of chickens laying eggs cage-free that is hardly, trust me, there's no grass in these cage-free buildings. When you go to the grocery store, it's not little, you know, old McDonald's farm. And another thing that I do is I work with, well, all of us. I guess all of us are part of the Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network, which is about, we've got about 18 groups now, and we're just kind of like what Christy was saying. We're trying to get together and leverage our collective voices, our collective power, to drive some change. And one thing I've seen, citizens don't often win this fight, because the regulatory and legislative system is set up to support industry over citizens. But every now and then, we win one. But there's one thing that's consistent, and that is that there's two things I've noticed in community groups that form and that they are actually to make good change. It might not mean that they might not stop the CAFO. And I don't know that stopping the CAFO really is the goal, because we don't have the legislative and regulatory support to do that. But what happens to these groups is they get together and they start driving change at the ground level, where they live, in their homes. And among these groups that do that, I've noticed there's two things. There's a unity of vision, and there's a diversity of tactics. And so how the unity of vision, what does that mean? That means that communities ask themselves three questions. I'm going to take a step back here, because in order for this, we know that Bayfield is very much different than Monroe, Wisconsin, and Kewaunee is very much different than Eau Claire, right? We live in a very diverse state as far as who we are and what the land looks like. So it's difficult for us to have a one-size-fits-all approach to anything, because we're diverse. There's a lot of different people with a lot of different ideas in the state. And so in order to respect that uniqueness, I ask communities to ask themselves three questions. Who are you in your community? What do you value in your community? What makes your community special? And then what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do to protect those things? And while those questions are consistent across all groups in Wisconsin, the answers are different in each community, as they should be. That is the absolute beauty of local control, is that it allows the community to develop rules and regulations that adequately and robustly define who they are. And that is, that's how this is going to change. And that's kind of how we got to this situation with CAFOs, is what John mentioned with the livestock siting law. It's a one-size-fits-all program for 150,000 sizes fits nobody state, right? So it's not working. And the what's important to know about that is that in order for us to answer these questions, because I think our society, we've gotten a little bit, I think we need to practice listening. I think we need to practice stop saying, let me tell you something, and we need to start saying, tell me more. Because let's say you live in a community where there's large-scale ag. Those people, while you may not agree with them, you have to understand their position. You have to be able to define that common ground that allows the guardrails, so to speak, to be put in place for your community so everyone feels safe. You know, this whole idea of making legislation that we've lost, in my opinion, in this state, in this country, is that it's a binary thing. There's a winner and there's a loser. That's not how it's supposed to go. Everyone should leave the table feeling like they kind of got a little bit screwed, but they're okay. That's what legislation, that's what it all does. It's this way of creating enough where everyone feels safe and good, and they're able to live with the decisions that they've made. And when I talk about diversity of tactics, I'm thinking, because Molly asked us to kind of figure out, what do we tell urban people? Because frankly, I mean, to be honest with you, rural Wisconsin could go to hell in a handbasket, and is it really going to matter to Madison? You have to ask yourself that question. Why should you all care? What's in this issue that's your thing? And that's why when we get to these situations and you think, well, what would I tell urban folks to think about CAFOs? I always go back to a watershed. A watershed feeds, there's a common body of water in a watershed. But there's all sorts of ways for water to work its way through that landscape, but it's all moving towards the same spot, right? So you might have someone like me who maybe is like a little bit more active, and so I'm a class 2 rapids, let's say, not class 4, because I'm not that active. But I could maybe be like a class 2. And then you have someone who's like an intermittent stream. They only run in the spring, and that's fine, because summer, they're done. So we need to, that's where you all come in, is you need to find your spot. Figure out, you know, you're here, you must care. So what can you bring to contribute to that common body of water? Which kind of leads me to my my final thing is, I've done a lot of these talks, and I used to give you guys a lot of facts for why this totally sucks. But I realized that's really not that's a let me tell you something. It's not a, you know, tell me more sort of thing. And I think where this comes in is that we're talking, like I said earlier, we're talking about truth. We're talking about justice. We're talking about a moral way to be in the world where your choices are not harming other people. And you have an opportunity as citizens of the state of Wisconsin to make a choice with your dollars, where you shop. I think that's very important. One thing we need to recognize with that is that we can't hang our hat on that only. Because there's a lot of people that can't afford to buy local food. At this point, there's a certain amount of privilege wrapped up. You have to have resources to afford that kind of food. Which leads me to my second request, is that the reason that food is expensive is because our government is supporting it. At its heart, this is purely a policy issue. Tomorrow, if I had a magic wand, I would do a couple things, but I would also like wave it over that way, or wherever the Capitol is, because those people that show up in that Capitol every day, they could choose to stop this tomorrow. They could choose to put money so Kewaunee has water. They could choose to strengthen the rules so people like Christy don't have to worry that their homes are going to be ruined. They're choosing not to. So everyone in this room, looks like everyone's over 18, you can vote. And that's important. Because it's not the DNR. The DNR is not our target. The DNR is not the people that can give us our win. The win only exists in Madison, Wisconsin, in that building. If you want a win that's going to be substantive, a win that's going to work, that's going to stay, it has to come from our elected officials, period. Because just about 3-4 months ago, I was working with some folks down in southwestern Wisconsin where Pipestone, which is a huge pork producer, they put a proposal in to put a farrowing facility, which is like a birthing facility, about 8,000 head of hogs, over a sinkhole in Karst. They're actually building this big, huge CAFO with, it's going to hold, I don't know, like, let's say 4 million gallons of manure over a sinkhole in Wisconsin, and it got permitted.
Can you explain Karst?
Karst is, it's a kind of earth that has big fissures in it, and so anything that's on top goes right down into the aquifer. But the fact that that tells you that the DNR, they're not going to give us our win. The elected officials are the only ones that can give us our win. And so Harry's going to take it from here, but what I, as part of the SRWN call, or what we're joined together over, is we want a moratorium on new and expanding CAFO permits. The existing people can stay in business. There's nothing we can do about that yet. But we need time to figure this out. A moratorium isn't a ban. A moratorium isn't a never. It's a pressing the pause button and saying, we need time to figure this out. We need to have our elected officials do their job, which is to protect our public health and safety, to protect citizens' freedom to turn on the water and be able to drink, to go outside and take a big breath of air and not start coughing, to know that the investment in your home, which is for most of us our largest investment, is safe because you don't have 6,000 hogs or 2,500 cows or a whole bunch of Jennie-O turkeys next door. That stuff's happening. And I believe that it's our elected officials' responsibility to us to do their job to help protect us, to provide those guardrails that we need, because we live in a civilized society that says there's rules of the road. An undue monetary influence should not be allowed to remove those guardrails or to put them so far apart that you could bring a circus through and there'd still be room. So the after that rousing speech, I want to finish. I always finish all of my talks with, I met this guy, so this is a big deal, right? Like, it sounds really good, go out there and vote and change the world. Well, it's going to be a hell of a lot harder than that. And so what do you do? Like, do you give up? Where do you find the inspiration to keep going? And there's a gentleman I met named Rick Young who was talking about the anti-smoking campaign in the 70s. And, you know, when they first started talking about no smoking in public, no smoking in airplanes, no smoking in hospitals, there's no way they thought that was going to work. But it did. And it worked because people stood up. And they decided to get involved, and they decided to find their place in the watershed. And what Rick says is, my point is that to give up hope is not just to deny the possibilities of the future. It is also to deny the lessons of the past. The world can change and does change. And what seemed almost impossible looking forward can seem almost inevitable looking back.
Okay. So my name is Harry Pulliam. I'm with Sustain Rural Wisconsin at work, like everybody at this table, and representatives from about 16 other organizations. I'm also very active in a group in Greene County called Greene County Defending Our Farmland. I'll tell you something about that in a little bit. I'm a very active member of Wisconsin Farmers Union, which, by the way, is an extremely progressive organization. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. I got into all of this through my efforts with Wisconsin United to Mend. Wisconsin United to Mend is an organization dedicated to getting the big money out of politics, which is why we have the problem that we have now. When you contact your representative and you don't get a call back, you invite them to a meeting, they don't show up. You hold a town hall and you have an empty chair. That's because of money in politics. So I met a lady at a farmer's market a few years ago, maybe 2013, who's a pasture pork producer. What that means is she has a very small farm and she raises hogs on pasture. Some of the finest bacon on the planet, by the way. not $1.99 a pound, or $1.39 a pound, but it's some of the finest bacon on the planet. And so we got to be friends, and she and her husband met. We talked quite a bit, and I became, at that same point in place in time, the co-chair of the Greene County United to Amend effort. So we were in the process of getting resolutions and referenda across Greene County, calling on the state legislature and the Congress to pass a constitutional amendment that said that corporations are not people and money is not speech. So somewhere along the line, we were having an organizational meeting, and I invited my friend April to come to that meeting. She said, "Well, I can't come." I said, "Well, why not?" I said, you're a farmer, right? You have time in the evening, perhaps. She says, "No, I have to go to a Greene County Defending Our Farmland meeting." I said, "So what's that?" So I went, and I was in over my eyes in problems that those folks were encountering. About middle of 2015, a fellow rapped on a friend of mine's door, another friend, who is a livestock producer, diversified livestock producer. She raises cows on pasture, pigs on pasture, turkeys on pasture, chickens on pasture. And a fellow came to her door and says, took a piece of paper out of his briefcase and says, "Sign this." She says, "Sign what?" She says, "Sign this." She says, "What's that?" She says, "Well, we're going to put a farm down the road here, and we need you to sign a manure lease," which means it's a rental agreement or an easement for them to spread manure on your property. And she said no. And then she got to put the word out to the community, and 120 people showed up at her farm the next Saturday. That was before I came to this fold. Since that time, we have garnered support from about 350 people. We have a mailing list of 350 people. That's Greene County Defending Our Farmland. And the operation about a quarter mile from her house is called Pinnacle Dairy. They will, if it's permitted, if the permit is not in force yet, if it is permitted, it will have 5,800 cows on 127 acres with 20 acres of what they call manure lagoons, figure open cesspools, 94 million gallons of liquid manure, which they will spread twice a year on 7,000 acres, which are nearly as susceptible to pollution as Kewaunee County. And so we reached out to the county board, and the county board said, "Well, gee, this is an ag county. I mean, you know, we have four CAFOs. We have four communities or four CAFOs that are about 1,000 cows apiece," which, by the way, those people are not in favor of this operation at all. It's ag. Things are good. Ag is good, right? Then we started writing letters to the editor, and we started having public meetings. And the county board members said, "Gee whiz, my phone's ringing off the hook. People are telling me we need to get involved here." So that's what started. And this operation is currently under construction. They have spent millions of dollars pouring God knows how much concrete out there. On an area that is a wetland that has been tiled for over 100 years because it floods every spring, into a stream that floods, already impaired, by the way. That stream flows into the Little Sugar River, which flows into Decatur Lake, which is essentially a recreational residential community, and from there into downtown Broadhead, about 6 miles away. So if there is ever a structural failure in one of those cesspools, 94 million gallons of liquid manure will end up in Broadhead, Wisconsin. We will have an environmental disaster the likes of which has not yet been seen in Wisconsin. They've been required by the county to put in some monitoring wells to see if they can keep the place dry. They can't pump it dry because if you have a pump failure, you have problems. Because it's such a wet area, they're concerned about hydrostatic pressure causing the manure lagoons to fail, and therefore having this environmental disaster I described. They have been pumping out the monitoring wells, every time the county conservation goes out there to check on the property. They have a hose in the monitoring wells and a pump running. So that's kind of like akin to going to your butcher and ordering 5 pounds of beef, and the guy standing there with his thumb on the scale. So they're pumping out the monitoring wells, which are supposed to be measuring the amount of water in the soil. But 2.5 years later, it's still not permitted. So we'll see what happens. United to Amend efforts have taught me that when you have a problem, follow the money. The governor has received millions of dollars in campaign contributions from the Dairy Business Association. I said, who's the Dairy Business Association? She's like, farmers group, right? Well, not really. In order to belong to the Dairy Business Association, which primarily supports CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations, people with over 1,000 animal units, or about 750 cows, or so many pigs and so many chickens or so many goats. The Dairy Business Association requires a membership fee of $1.50 per animal. Some of these CAFOs have 13,000 animals. So where's the money coming from? And now we know where the money is going. The State Attorney General Brad Schimmel received $55,000 from some of these organizations. He also received $14,000 recently from Michael Best and Friedrich, which is a law firm in Madison that almost exclusively represents CAFOs. And in January, guess who he hired as the chief of the Environmental Protection Unit for the Department of Justice in the state of Wisconsin, Anna Wildeman, who is a former dairy lobbyist for the Dairy Business Association, and who sued the state on several occasions because of and defended these operations, these polluters. So manure runs downhill, and that's what's happening in Wisconsin. So if you weren't scared before I came up here, maybe you're scared now. but I think it's important to realize that, like was said earlier, that we need to reach out to our fellow citizens. We need to talk to them about what we value in our community. We need to make the Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network moratorium on CAFOs an election issue. It needs to be an election issue. If you walk down the hallway here in the Capitol and you can't get any purchase with the people there, vote them out of office. Find a way to get them out of office. Talk to people around the state who might be receptive to your conversation. Let's get a moratorium, and if they won't pass a moratorium, put somebody in there who will. That's it for me.